Ladies and gentlemen, we're moving on to the next part of our conference, which is a panel discussion working together under, and the title is What is a Shared Future? Jonathan Bell will be the chairman, one of our junior ministers, Right Honourable Geoffrey Donaldson, Professor Tony Gallagher, who's the Pro Vice Chancellor of Queen's University, and Peter Sheridan, Chief Executive of Cooperation Ireland, will be on the panel, and I'd ask them to come take their positions now, please. Thank you.
Okay, conference, I'm delighted to have, well, Geoffrey Donaldson doesn't need any introduction at all. DUP MP for Lagan Valley, first elected to the old Northern Ireland Assembly when I was 15 in 1985. He was election agent for Enoch Powell in South Down. Geoffrey is a former Assistant Grand Master of the Orange Grand Lodge of Ireland, and he's a leading member of the Parliamentary Christian Fellowship. Beside him, Professor Tony Gallagher joined Queen's University as a lecturer in education in 1992. In 2005, he was appointed head of the School of Education. His main interest is in the role of education in societies marked by ethnic conflict. He has extensive experience of the Israel-Palestinian conflict, and you're very welcome here today, Tony. And beside him, to my immediate right, is Peter Sheridan, Chief Executive of Cooperation Ireland. He took on this role in 2009. Peter was a police officer for 30 years, enlisting as a cadet officer on my 8th birthday in 1978. He witnessed many of the darkest days of the Troubles, and Peter rose through the ranks to become Assistant Chief Constable of the Royal Ulster Constabulary and then and the Police Service of Northern Ireland. So give our panel a warm welcome, conference today. Geoffrey Donaldson, can I ask you, can we have a serious debate about a shared future when some of our communities refuse to share a public road?
John, I think we should have a serious debate about your age for a start. But obviously, the issue around parades is something that once again this summer came to the fore. But you know, those issues are really the symptoms of a problem, not the cause of a problem. And at the heart of the problem is that there are still sectarian attitudes that prevail in Northern Ireland. Attitudes, I think, that are born out of the segregation of our society because of over 30 years of conflict and violence. And the peace walls that are up in Belfast, predominantly Belfast, but some in other areas, separate our communities. And that breeds mistrust, suspicion, and fear. And those are very powerful ingredients towards creating conflict. And sometimes it boils over into pure hatred as well. So, as you know, Jonathan, we worked very hard to bring forward what we believed and still believe were very good proposals to deal with the parades issue. Proposals that would have moved us away from this sterile debate about sectarian attitudes and the reality of those attitudes towards building a culture of respect, mutual respect, understanding, a system that we believe would have helped to resolve over time the parades issue and provided a framework for moving us on to the next stage. So that is still on the table, and I do hope, in light of what happened this summer, that those proposals can be revisited, as the First Minister has said, by all means, if people want to look at them, if they've got suggestions for change, but nobody else has come up with any other viable alternative and put it on the table. And therefore, we believe that what we're offering is something that should be embraced. But of course, as you will know from your work as a minister, there is First Minister has described as our shared future agenda, the strategy that has now been tentatively agreed and requires the further endorsement of party leaders at Stormont. But I think that strategy is vital towards addressing the underlying causes of sectarianism in Northern Ireland. It's not enough to take the sticking plaster and try and and believe that putting a sticking plaster over the wound will heal the wound. It won't. We need to get to the root causes of that problem, and I believe that the strategy for cohesion, sharing and integration offers the framework within which we can now go forward.
Okay. Peter Sheridan, you've experienced the parades and conflict and parades. I think I caused you a few difficulties in my early days in Craigavon Council in Lurgan. Is it possible to get a shared future in the middle of all this?
I think that's exactly what the shared future is about. I think we will know we've been successful in the shared future when at some stage in the future we can see that we have moved from that hostility and bitterness towards recognition, and that where people aren't penalised just because they're different, whether that's because they're walking down a particular road or they're protesting about people walking down that particular road. And I think that will be the real test of a shared. I talk about a shared society rather than the shared future, because it always seems a shared future, something way down the road that we're not getting to. In fact, I talk about shared societies across these islands. But the real challenge in that will be that we respect each other for our difference. I think some of the misconceptions around a shared future is that we're trying to create a homogeneous society where we're all the same. That's the exact opposite of a shared society. A shared society is about sharing our differences, respecting differences, whether that is about people parading, whether that is people who have a different view, but respecting those differences. And that will be the real test of it. I think we have a long way to go in it. As I said at a previous event, when you look at our society at the minute, that there are 88 peace walls in Belfast today. There were 18 of them before the Good Friday Agreement. The fact that our education system is still segregated, our 95% of our social housing is still segregated, and there are not many plans to deal with that segregation in housing. So that tells you when the document does come out, we have a long way and a long road to travel. And the Secretary of State is absolutely right in this. That's the breeding ground for dissidents. That's the ground that they attract people from. So the sooner we all of us recognise the value in having a shared society where all of our traditions are respected by the other. Yes, we have to respond with dignity and respect to other people's rights in it. But that's, you know, it's a bit of give and take in it. And if we allow the sectarianism to continue, if we settle for communal division or separateness in this society, then that is the ground that dissidents will breed from.
Okay. Tony, what do you think of what Peter and Jeffrey have said?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree completely with the sentiment of what I'm hearing so far. George Bernard Shaw once said that Britain and America were two nations divided by a common language. And what he meant by that was that people would use the same words but often mean very different things when they use those words. And I think there's an element of that that applies in this particular situation. I mean, I know, for example, that for many people, a key part of the parading tradition is that it's part of the way of communing with past generations, maintaining that historical link with past generations. But I know also that other people experience it as the assertion of control. And those sorts of different perceptions of what's happening here lead to the sort of mistrust that Jeffrey was talking about. And I think we need to try and think of ways in which we can overcome that. In some senses, I think this whole issue provides us with a really good example of what we actually mean. What are the options for a shared future? It's possible, for example, that one option is an option where we simply live within our differences and we use public space as a space to express those differences. But to me, that's a shared future, which is almost like living apart together. My sense of a shared future is that we create a much more connected society where people are working together. We build a more cohesive society, a society where through processes of dialogue and engagement, we promote understanding, we challenge mistrust and build relationships of trust across the whole community. Because I think that's the way in which we're going to be able to move forward, as it says on the slogan, and build a better Northern Ireland for everyone here.
Peter, just to move on to another subject, and you would have known and what a debt we owe the Royal Ulster Constabulary and our police service for everything they've been through over the last many years. What do victims need to be included in a shared future?
I think, like all of us, they want recognition. I think the bitterness, and I suppose for many victims, and I know many victims, both as neighbours and as colleagues in the organisation, what they want is they want a stable society that's safe for difference in the future, like all the rest of us. But they want to be recognised and they want to be included as part of that. And they don't want to be told about a line in the sand and that they're that their losses aren't going to be part of that shared society in the future. So I do think that they want primarily recognition for their hurt and pain and the fact that it's never going to happen again to them.
Tony, what do you see as victims needing to be included if we're going to really get to this, you know, shared future as opposed to a shared out future?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is another one of those crucial tests of what a shared future actually means, because I think Peter's right. Victims want recognition, they want acknowledgement. I think victims want a sense of justice as well. They all have to be part of the process. What they don't want is to be forgotten and ignored. So I think that's the sort of the basic principle we've got to work with. I was lucky enough just recently to be appointed to the board of the Maislon Keisch Corporation. That's obviously it's a very controversial area, that site, because of the history of the site, because of what happened there. I know there's many people, perhaps many people within this party, who worry that that could become a place that privileges one particular narrative. One of the ways we're going to try to deal with that within the corporation is to see that site very much as a place of many narratives, narratives that stretch way back beyond its recent history. And acknowledges the sort of the full history that exists there. And it's that sense of acknowledgement, that sense of many voices, I think, has to be part of this process. But Peter made a very important point as well, which I think is absolutely crucial. One of the best things that we can do for the victims, as well as providing people with a sense of justice, but by working together, we can create a society where there will be no more victims, and that's actually the most important thing.
Jeffrey, I mean, we've heard heroic figures this morning from Sammy Brush, Trevor Cummings, Alan Breslin, members of our party who still carry the wounds of terrorist assault. Your family is no stranger to bereavement through terrorism. How hard is it for victims, and how do we bring them into a genuinely shared place?
I think one of the things I've learned through my work with victims is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach here, that If you talk to three different victims, you'll get three different views on things. I think victims can be broadly categorised into three categories. There are those who have moved on with their lives and they really don't want... I think what they all share, and I agree with Tony and Peter, is that none of them want to go back to the dark days of the past. That's absolutely clear. I think there are those who have moved on with their lives and who really just want to move forward as a family. There are those who perhaps don't believe they're going to ever get justice. They wouldn't want justice to be denied, but they've no real expectation it's going to come after all these years. But they do want recognition for their suffering and they want support for their needs. And then you have some who believe that they should have justice, that it's still attainable, and they don't want the door closed on the prospect of justice. Now, it's coming up with something that accommodates all of those things that is the real challenge for us. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult. There is no agreed, there's not even an agreed narrative on the past, never mind how we deal with the past. And as our party leader said, there are some who would seek to rewrite the history of the Troubles. And you know, we're not going to allow that to happen either. But I think that a very powerful thing we can do, and Tony has alluded to this, is that we can give people the opportunity to tell their story. I think there is agreement that that should happen. And one of the things we're looking at in terms of the Peace Centre at the Mays site is that there would be an opportunity for people to tell their story so that those stories are recorded, the stories of the victims of violence. And you know, I would, for the record, Jonathan, I would want to make it absolutely clear that there is no question of the Peace Centre at the Mays being turned into a shrine to any terrorist organisation. And what we will seek to do is ensure that the narratives that are there reflect the totality of what happened and not a partial approach to what happened. So I think as far as we are concerned, what we must continue to do through your office and others is to support the victims, to ensure that they receive the welfare that they need. I think that's important. but above all recognition for their suffering, the opportunity to tell their story. And we do have processes in place whereby the search for justice continues, however difficult that may be. But as to an agreed narrative, as to an agreed approach to how we deal with the legacy of the past, I have to be honest, I think we're still some way off that.
Tony, can I ask you, the First Minister this morning had said, put the Democratic Unionist Party on a clear steer, compass to a shared future and not a shared out future. So very explicitly, a shared future. What are the barriers to a shared future? And maybe if you could even bring, I know you're just back from Israel and you have international experience in some of these matters that you could bring to bear. But what are the barriers and what are the solutions to get us to the point that the First Minister has steered the party on, which is for a shared future?
Yeah, I suppose there are two main areas of barriers. On one level, we have the physical barriers, the institutional barriers that divide up our society, divide us into silos, like the peace walls that Peter mentioned, or even the divided school system that we have. Mechanisms, processes within society that keep us apart. As well as that, there are emotional barriers, and they're equally as powerful barriers caused by fear and anxiety and anger. And those barriers have to be addressed as well. So identifying the barriers, I think, is relatively straightforward. Trying to identify solutions, I think, is a much more challenging task. In the work I'm doing in education, we're specifically looking at the school system. We're recognising the institutional barriers that the schools currently put between young people. And what we're trying to do is to make those barriers porous by promoting shared education, promoting collaboration between schools. We're encouraging young people to move between schools to take classes. We're encouraging teachers to move between schools to support and help one another. And what we're finding is an extraordinary degree of enthusiasm and excitement about that. It allows people, in a sense, to maintain aspects of their own identity, while at the same time having sustained regular engagement with others. And we know from our experience that whenever teachers are facing a particular problem, if they address that problem in a shared way, then they have a wider set of resources to draw upon. They're more likely to come up with a creative solution. But I think more importantly, they're more likely to come up with a solution that will stick. And I think if we've achieved this within educational contexts, I think there's a very real prospect of the same sort of idea operating on a much larger scale. As you say, I'm just back from a visit to Israel, where I was working with some Arab and Jewish educators who had heard about the shared education model and were interested in exploring ways in which they might be able to adapt aspects of that to their situation. But the thing that was most striking about the conversations I had with the people there, at various points I talked about what has happened here over the last 10 or 15 years. And I have to tell you, the people I was talking to were in awe of what we have achieved, absolutely in awe of what's been achieved here. And one of the things that I got a very strong sense from them was that they find it very difficult to see any way out of where they are now. But the fact that a place like Northern Ireland, which was also once in that position, has achieved so much in a relatively short period of time, gives them hope of the possibility of positive change. Now, I also said to them that things are difficult, there's a long way to go, but the fact that things have moved is what's so important. Sometimes we, I think, focus on our problems without stepping back a little bit to realise what we've been achieved. I think the First Minister in his speeches at the conference has given us a very good picture of what's been achieved. And I think that should act as an impetus to all of us to keep driving that process forward, because there really isn't any other way to go.
Peter, I mean, you know the vision. First Minister set it out. How do we get there?
I think, first of all, I agree with Tony and the First Minister that we have made huge progress, and sometimes we're our own worst enemies about as if we have never made any progress in this. I consistently say, we've probably saved up to 2,000 lives since the Good Friday Agreement, the Belfast Agreement, was signed. And we shouldn't underestimate that. Those 10 police officers a year losing their lives, that hasn't happened. So we have made huge progress around it. So, but the evidence for stopping the violence is there. Everybody can see the evidence for that. But the evidence for building a shared future isn't there. And I think some of the barriers that are still outstanding are that there is a sense out in the community that we divide up. There is a sense that we, rather than working together, we manage apart. there is a sense from people, and I think some of the social tensions you saw over the summer are about people's fear of losing. And in the education debate, I think there's a fear of a dilution of people's ethos, their religious ethos and symbols. And yet that's not what a shared future is about. And I hope that when the document comes out that it is absolutely clear in that it is not about making us all the same, because that's some of the perception that's out in the community, that shared future, oh, we're all going to be the same. It is the opposite of that. And I keep saying that, and I think at ministerial level, they're going to have to continue to tell people this is about protecting people's cultural traditions or religious backgrounds, but working together in that and recognizing and having the dignity to respect where we all come from in that. So I do think there's a big uphill battle of work to be done as soon as that document is issued, and it's only the starting for it, because the next 20 years, 25 years will be about building shared societies across these islands.
Geoffrey, you started the work on the shared future. You know how difficult it is to gain the consensus. Talk us through from your experience how difficult it is, but where we should be able to get to.
Well, there's no doubt it is difficult, and in our society we have people and organisations or groups of people who fear change because they feel it threatens a degree of control that they have over an element of our community. But let me say, from a unionist perspective, unionists have nothing to fear from a shared future. And the First Minister outlined this in his speech earlier. Support for the union is growing. And it's growing not because we are besieged, if you like, not because we as unionists are keeping our unionism in some kind of a defined box. It's growing because we're reaching out beyond the boundaries that we've operated within before. Been forced perhaps to operate within because of 30 years of conflict and division. And we're reaching out beyond that. And sadly, that isn't being matched to the same extent on the other side. It saddens me that when I see the SDLP, I see a party that seems to be kind of moving in the wrong direction when it comes to a shared future, becoming more, I won't say extreme, maybe that's a harsh word, but certainly more hard line in its attitudes. And when you get the supposedly moderate party on the national side doing that, then, you know, where does that leave Sinn Féin? In some ways, some people in Sinn Féin are ahead of the SDLP when it comes to these things. But look, our unionism is not about building a shared future based on party politics or dealing with other political parties. It is about taking a clear message and taking it out to the wider community, going beyond the political process to reach people. But I do want to say, and I said this last year and I repeat it again, at the same time as we want to broaden our political base, we also want to ensure that we bring people with us, especially from those working class Protestant communities where only one third of people are voting at the moment. And that we need to be talking to them as well. And it's not because the DUP don't work in those communities. It's not because we aren't connected with those communities. It's because, for some reason, a lot of those people have switched off politics. And we need to get them switched back on again, because their votes are important for the union. But they have the building a shared future means they are part of that future as well, and we've got to help them see the vision that we have outlined as a party. And you know, it's difficult because the media doesn't really want to portray this message. And therefore, we've got to engage with people face to face. We've got to take the message that our party leader and deputy leader and others have outlined today. We've got to take that message by other means so that it connects with people, that they understand where we're going with this, what a shared future means, and above all, that it's based on our belief that the union is for everyone in Northern Ireland, and that unionism extends beyond any sectarian, political, ethnic barrier, any religious barrier. And that's what we mean by a shared future, one that embraces everyone in Northern Ireland.
I think John, as well, that we shouldn't forget the economic benefits that a shared future brings for both for governments, for businesses, for communities, for families and individuals. shared societies generate economic well-being. In a shared society, we're much more likely to be better off than in a society that's divided.
Okay, with just in about 30 seconds to a minute each, Tony, I mean, what advice, we've got councillors, we've got people who work in community organisations, voluntary organisations, work through their churches, MPs, MEPs, MLAs. One piece of advice that you'd like to leave with conference to encourage us as to how to get to that shared future?
Well, if you look at the history of our society, you look at many aspects of it in the current phase, we are a divided society, a society where there are many silos of different kinds that keep us apart. I think one of the most important things anyone can do is to try to identify those barriers and explore ways of making those barriers more porous and reaching across those barriers. And I think if people could be creative and imaginative about that, that could do an enormous amount to move things forward.
Okay, Peter?
Yeah, my message is very simple on it. A shared society has to be constructed and nurtured, and that requires strong political leadership. And it won't be grown from the bottom up. It requires strong leadership at every level, whether that's in education, in policing, in all our services, in health, and so on. It has to be driven through by strong political leadership.
Geoffrey, a last word.
Well, I agree with what Peter says, and this party has shown that when it comes to the tough decisions, we will provide the leadership. And on the shared future, we are giving the lead. And maybe some people are surprised by that, but as I engage with people in my own constituency, I think more and more people are warming to it, are warming to the message that we have. And I think that we should stick with that message, which is, in the end, about taking Northern Ireland forward.
Conference, can we show our appreciation to Geoffrey Donaldson MP, Professor Gallagher and Peter Sheridan. Thank you very much. And I hand back to Lord Morrow.